This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 109, where we're going to talk about the latest cloud news, recorded live December 30th, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Morning, AC.
Good morning, CG. How are you doing today?
I'm not too bad, thank you. I've got a little bit of a cough, which is annoying. So, apologies in advance for blowing your eardrums out.
Does that go from spending 2 weeks in Mexico and then coming home for a few days and then going skiing for a day? Jackass.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, dear. Yes. Probably from spending time on the little disease tubes that are called airplanes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been watching you move around and stuff. Looks like fun, which is kind of funny because at the same time, I have been booking flights for spring break where our family is going to go skiing.
Mm-hmm.
And then also booking flights for a getaway that my wife and I are going to celebrate. Each of us turn 40 years old next year, and our 15-year wedding anniversary, and we're actually going to go stay at a place which is maybe 5 minutes away from where you were in Mexico. So,
oh, nice.
I see you like living the last 3 weeks, the flights that I'm booking to go on in the next 6 months.
yeah, down to Zihuatanejo, yeah?
Yep.
Excellent. That sounds fun. I love it down there. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
I had a blast. But yeah, I've managed to pick up a cough. But yeah, probably got to do with the freezing cold temperatures here.
All good.
Yeah, how about you?
Not freezing cold here, man. In Florida, it's been in the 80s, which is, I'm about 2 to 3 weeks away from doing a half marathon. I'm really hoping that it cools off. I did 11 miles the other day, and I took a big water bottle with me. I had to start conserving my water at about 5 miles in, which really sucks.
Ouch, yeah. Hey, well, it's a sunny high of 40 degrees here today, and currently 29 Fahrenheit, which is about -2 in Celsius for those in real units.
I would welcome that right now. I'm sitting here. I ran this morning and it was 75 degrees, so it's I'm still t-shirt and shorts, man. I can't wear jeans yet.
Oh man, I could be a t-shirts and shorts guy, but it's gonna be awfully awkward and weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what do we got in store for today? We've got some news. We've got to go through some picks and catch up on a bit of what's been going on.
Yeah, man. Sounds good to me. You want to start off with a few picks or?
Yeah, why don't we kick off with some picks? You want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
All right. My pick this week is SmartThings and home automation with Z-Wave and Zigbee.
Ooh.
I've been wanting to do this for a while, and this Christmas Santa was pretty good to me, and got me a Samsung SmartThings hub and some switches and sockets and things. So it's pretty nifty. If you haven't done this before, it's all these different devices you could use to control from your phone or from the web, either out of the house or in the house. So you could do things like turn on power sockets. There's motion detectors. There's dimmable light switches, all that sort of stuff. And you could put them together to do things like different scenes or rules, like when I open the back door after 10 p.m., then switch on the hall light and things like that. So currently my first rule was turning on the coffee machine at a certain time of the day and the lights nearby it. So I walk down, my coffee machine's nice and toasty.
Mm.
It's a pretty cool system, and it's, you know, I've been looking at it for a few years, and it just seems like the last couple of years, or the last 5 years really, it's just been a real, pardon my French, but a bit of a show. There was, you know, there's X10 and the Z-Wave and Zigbee, and it just seems to be at the point where things are starting to come together, and stuff's working with other things. So, like SmartThings will work with Zigbee and Z-Wave, which are the two wireless formats or standards or protocols, I suppose. So you don't have to decide if you're a Z-Wave person or a Zigbee person. You can use whatever devices you have. It's pretty cool.
Very cool.
Now they're about to start adding SmartThings to Samsung TVs as well. So you'll be able to control your TV and also use the TV to look at like webcams that you've got connected to the system and control devices and stuff. So it seems to be taking off.
Very cool.
Yeah. How about you?
I have two picks. One is fairly short, but so I got was it Destiny for Xbox One over the Christmas holiday?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Found out that I am one of those noobs who just gets pawned in a second when I jump on a multiplayer. I'm just like, my kids learned all kinds of four letter words watching me play. I'm just like, oh, you got to be, every time I jump in a multiplayer game, I'm getting destroyed before I have a chance to even see who's even shooting at me.
Yeah, that sounds like bad player matching. You know, they should do a better job of that.
Well, I think they do. There's a handful of us that kind of suck at the bottom of each one of the teams, but I'm just trying to find the one that I'm trying to kill. So at any rate, yeah, there was that one. We got the Star Wars Battlefront, which actually is a lot of fun playing in versus mode against your kids.
Oh, yeah.
In person. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. It's kind of like you have to get up to 100 points. You have a squad of four guys. You're one of the four. They follow you around. They fight for you on your behalf. You can't really control them. They just kind of stay with you. And the idea is that when you get killed, you drop a coin that's worth 2 points, and the other team has to go pick up that coin, and they get those 2 points. But if your squad picks up your coin, or you pick up one of your squad mates' coins before the other team does, then you essentially save 2 points from going to the other team.
I see.
It is a lot of fun. You get like a 15 or 20 minute game going with your kids. And man, my daughter held her own. She was a little 6-year-old, was kicked the crap out of me on Hoth, but
I'm gonna have to try that. That sounds like something my kids would be into.
Yeah, it's fun. But hey, my real pick though is a quadcopter. So I had a fun experience.
Ooh.
Fun experience this week, for Christmas, where my son, Santa brought my son his first quadcopter. It would be our first one in the house. I used to be like I'd go get a remote control airplane or remote control helicopter, and I just sucked at them for years. And they've really just kind of taken off. So we got a SEMA X5C for him. A little $45 quadcopter. It's a lot. It was a lot of fun. He did a really good job flying it. Much better job than I was doing at first. And I put it up on Facebook that Christmas Day was learning how to fly a quadcopter. Christmas Day plus one was my son and I doing research on Amazon on how to repair a quadcopter. So the good thing is that this is a very common thing. I think that,
yeah, it's inevitable.
Yeah. And it's a flying device, and it's going to fall and bump into stuff. So the cool thing is that the parts are dirt cheap. So like, it's a really, I was always been intimidated. These things were going to be expensive to get into because, you know, what do you see when you go look online? You see the DJI Phantom, which is like $600. And I was like, I'm not going to fly this and drop it in a lake and, you know, drop $600 that easy. The one that I got is, like I said, it's like $45. And then all the different parts for it, you could essentially rebuild the whole thing for like $50 and order every single one of the parts online. From the little board that sits in the middle of the quadcopter to the four motors, the housing for the motor, the blade, and then the whole body and stuff. So
nice.
Pretty sure that when he was flying it one time, he picked it up and then accidentally hit the remote. And I think it burned out one of the motors. So like one of them doesn't spin as much. And so the it doesn't lift off.
I see.
But I tell you, man, one of the trickiest parts of it is finding a place that ships spare parts, but does not ship them from Hong Kong.
Yeah, gotcha.
So every place I went to order parts from on December the 26th, it was like estimated delivery February the 25th through, January the 25th through February the 5th. And it's like, man, that.
Yeah, you need something a bit quicker than that, huh?
Yeah, so, and I'm not aware of a spot where I live. There might be one, like I'm sure that Fry's near you probably has some of these parts and stuff, but got like a motor, like I got a four pack of motors for like $10. So I mean, it's like,
wow,
it's super easy to do this. So today,
that's nice.
We have the second quadcopter showing up. This one's mine, using my Christmas money, and then a new set of motors and a new set of like landing skids and stuff. So this afternoon's gonna be fun.
That's cool. I like the idea of fixing them too. That sounds good.
Oh, there's all these mods that we see people have done, like range extenders, and it comes with a little HD camera that you can turn on, but I'm going to mount my GoPro to it and try and fly that around. And you can take out the motors that are all plastic and replace them with brass ones and take the batteries that are just like 500 milliamps and replace it with 750 milliamp batteries. And there's so many different mods you can do to it. It looks pretty cool. It's geeking out. Fun toy.
Yeah, that's nice. I got to get one of those. That'd be fun.
It's fun.
Hey, so on to the news.
Yes, man. We've missed a bunch of news.
We have.
The last month.
It's been a lot going on. The first thing I thought we'd kick off with is we briefly mentioned that Office 365 Enterprise E5 SKU went live. I think a couple of shows ago we mentioned it, but we thought we'd follow up on it as we've learned a little bit more about it. And I think both you and I are on it now, and so we can, you know, we could talk a little bit about the telephony side of things that have changed and a few more of the features. But in a nutshell, E5 is a continuation or the next step beyond what was called E4. But E5 basically includes some PSTN conferencing, so dial-in voice bridge conferencing for holding meetings, and Cloud PBX was the other big feature. So the ability to do call in and call out to landlines, phone lines, you know, anywhere in the world potentially. Mm-hmm. Now the way that works is you get E5, but then you have to buy a voice plan. E5 will give you PSTN conferencing out of the box, but then you have to buy a voice plan if you want Cloud PBX. And that gets you a number, like a phone number, and either unlimited international dialing or just domestic dialing and stuff like that. So that's sort of an add-on thing to your E5 SKU, as I understand it anyway. Mm. There's some other things like Skype Meeting Broadcast, which is the ability to hold a meeting on Skype for Business and broadcast it out on the internet for up to 10,000 people. I don't know if that's new to E5 particularly. I can't remember it being an E4, but I thought that was a feature that was pretty interesting as well.
So everything you just mentioned, that's all brand new to Office 365, not just to E5, but that's to 365. None of that stuff is even available in E4s.
Exactly, yeah. Yep. So these are the kind of the next advance was, you know, for a long time we waited for Skype for Business, obviously in Office 365, to... It just made no sense to me that you couldn't call phone numbers mm-hmm. from Skype for Business mm-hmm. Unless you jumped through a bunch of hoops and hooked up voice. And you went through a whole thing with your side to do that. But now at least you can get it with Office 365, add a voice plan, pick your numbers, do dial in and dial out if you want, and get that all hooked up. It just seems like, especially as a small and medium business, as an enterprise feature, this is interesting. But I think what would be really interesting is in a SMB SKU mm-hmm. for small and medium businesses like us, we don't want desk phones. Enterprises all have desk phones and VoIP and all that stuff already. But a lot of SMBs that are either starting up or wanting to cut their costs from these traditional voice providers or telephone providers, it just seems like a complete no-brainer for small and medium business. Whereas for me, it seems like a much bigger sell to enterprise, but that's where a lot of the money is.
I agree with you. So I to be clear, I don't have an E5. I have an E3, and then I added on the PTSN and Cloud PBX.
Gotcha.
I did those two add-ons. And the reason why I did that is because I would do an E5, but as a Microsoft MVP, I get licenses to E3, and I use that as kind of like my production Office 365 license. So I get that for free. So that's like, what, 20 or 30 bucks. I get that one for free. And then on the other, then I went ahead and I added in the other two Skype for Business pieces to get the phone and the Cloud PBX and the meeting broadcast and everything. Once I get out of the trial, which I think is my trial goes until like March or April or May because I was in the preview, it'll be like an additional 20 bucks a month for me or something, which is nice. You're right. I used to be on, when Office 365 first came out, I was one of the people who used something called Link to Phone, which was the, I think it was called Jaja, which is a service provider that connected to 365 that would host my phone number and would effectively do the exact same thing that we have today, but it wasn't all single source solution. It was kind of, I had a relationship with a third party who connected to 365 and got it all to work.
Yeah.
It partially worked. Microsoft did a really bad job of the support and everything, and they finally just pulled the plug on it and said, we're done. Our partners are backing out of this business. We're going to stop doing it. We'll come back when it's Skype for Business. And they did. And so I was like, a buddy of mine actually tried it out. We've had him on the show, Bing Stedging. And he tried it out. He tried the trial. He did a number porting. I did the number porting. I was shocked at how fast it worked. I think I filled my request out on a Monday or a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Within about 30 minutes or about maybe 15 to 30 minutes, it said that my approval was or my request was approved. And it would be 2 days on Thursday morning was when it would actually take effect. And sure enough, Thursday morning, I woke up, gave a call, and it worked right away. So So far, the service is cool. I really do like the fact that when I miss a call or when I ignore a call, I don't have to go to Skype to see things I missed. It actually shows up as an email. And voicemails show up as emails too. So I really like that feature. The one feature that I really hate, and this is affecting you too, is the fact that we still don't have a Skype for Business client on OS X on Mac, even though Microsoft told us back at Ignite, back in the middle of the year, was that we would have it at the end of this year. And I'm sorry, but this is, I'm getting irritated with the Office division. We'll talk about this when we get to our predictions or our wishes and stuff like that going when we get in the next episode. But I'm getting irritated the fact that, you know, this whole cross-platform stuff that they're so big on. I mean, we still don't have add-ins fully in Outlook on OS X. We still don't have full Outlook parity in Word or in the other ones. We still don't have a reliable client on OS X. And I'm sorry, but this is getting really freaking stupid. I mean, they got a pony up here and get this done.
Yes. Yeah. If you're on OS X, the experience is much worse.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. And it's not like it wouldn't stop me. I would still go buy another Mac and I'd do it again. But I mean, all these phone calls and stuff, it does work. The Link client on OS X does work for me. I know you said you're having trouble with it. I don't know if you have the latest patches to it that came out. They don't automatically install. You have to go get them.
Yeah, I probably have to go get them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I use my Surface to do my phone calls, which is stupid right now. But anyway.
Right. Right.
Yep.
So yeah, that's E5 and Cloud PBX, PSTN calling, that sort of thing. It seems like about time that they got all the stuff ironed out. So I'm glad to see it all go live.
Absolutely. So, hey, let's stick with the 365 bit. We got another bit of news that came out. It did come out right before Christmas, December 21st on a blog, on the Office blogs. It's called the OneDrive for Business Update on Storage Plans and the Next Gen Sync Client. So Jeff Teeper, who is the corporate VP for OneDrive and SharePoint, had a bit of an update here, talked a little bit about the different storage plans that are available to you. You get automatic increases for people who are on an E3, 4, or E5, enterprise, government, if you're on an education plan, or if you have a OneDrive for Business plan 2 or SharePoint Online plan 2, you're going to get automatic increases in your online storage from 1 terabyte to 5 terabyte per user. Should be finished rolling out by the end of March 2016. They also talked, though, the big thing was, the storage thing is a trip. I mean, show me a laptop that's got 5 terabytes. And so until the storage clients, the sync clients, can actually give me a decent way of controlling what I'm syncing.
Yeah, selective sync.
Yeah, right. Like do like what Outlook or what Dropbox does. That the storage things just don't really make sense to me. But the other side, though, is talking about the next-gen storage, the next-gen sync client for Windows and Mac. So I've been using this in beta. It works pretty good on OS X. They are basically creating as a new sync client for OneDrive that is unified for both consumer and for business and does all the sync. So far, it seems to be working just fine for me. I will say there's one thing. There's two or three things about OneDrive that I just don't care for. And that's like when I installed this on my machine and I logged in, it on a Windows machine, it hijacked the documents folder and hijacked a couple other folders and stuck them inside of my OneDrive folder. I mean, this is a clean Windows 10 install. I logged in the first time using a Microsoft account. I installed OneDrive was already installed. It did an update and it changed the videos, music, documents, and whatever, all those folders you normally have in your profile, and it shoved them under my OneDrive.
That's bizarre.
And get this. I then went and started ripping a DVD whose temp folder was in the documents, was in its own folder within documents. And next thing I know, all of my machines in my office are all the fans kick in because they're all trying to sync about 4 or 5 gigs on a 30 gig Blu-ray that I was trying to rip.
And I'm just random.
And I'm looking at this like, what the hell is going on here? And all of a sudden,
it's all trying to sync.
Yeah. It's like, you're starting to run low on space. And my Surface is telling me I'm running low on space. I'm like, what the hell? And that's just a stupid experience. It was not clear at all that that's what was going on.
How bizarre. Yeah. I've definitely tried the preview client, or now the released one, for Mac. And
wait, the Mac one's not released yet. The preview one is.
No, it's released now.
Oh, I thought they said it would be the Mac client being available by the end of this. Oh, I got to go find that then.
It's available now. Yeah. Oh,
well, there you go.
So
breaking news.
Yeah, it's the next generation sync client for Mac is now available in the Mac App Store. But get this. Okay, so anybody with a Mac, prepare to laugh your head off, because So you go get the OneDrive client from the App Store, on the Mac App Store. You install it. Then you've got to follow a support article, which makes you log into a terminal window and run two different commands to set it up to be able to log in for OneDrive for Business. So when you install it from the Mac App Store, you can sign into your OneDrive, but not OneDrive for Business. If you want to enable signing in for OneDrive for Business, you have to open a terminal window and go type in a couple of different commands. And they're not like LS, right? They're like 50 characters long each. So you could copy paste them, but it's not straightforward for the average user.
I think the theory,
so I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. The theory goes why this would have been something they didn't fix is because they expect the sync client to be rolled out automatically in a company, not people installing it individually like this.
Right, because that's what you can do with a Mac.
Oh yeah, you could do automated provisioning of apps into a Mac.
Not very easily, I don't think, right? Or can, I mean, it's not like how you do it with Windows or like group policy and everything.
No, I think you could do it with Intune and things like that though.
Oh.
You could push, there's definitely, I mean, we're not experts in this area, but the idea is that you'd go roll out these things to all the Macs in your enterprise.
We can still talk around our ass though about it.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's just a weird wrinkle.
Like if that's going to be your first experience when you try it out, that's pretty poor.
Yeah. I mean, can we do like sudo space something to like run as admin and let it go do it for us? I mean, it's just like the install process or make it, they got to make that easier. That's ridiculous. I mean, there's two or three different apps that I have that don't like El Capitan for OS X, and I've had to do special things to get them to work, but not like opening a terminal window or running a terminal thing. I mean, that's just...
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious.
They got to get that resolved.
Yep. It's
just not an end user thing. That's not a friendly thing to do. And like, oh, but you're on 365. It's like, you're selling that shit to people who are in, sorry. You're selling that stuff to like, to the education space. You're going to tell me that a freshman in college is supposed to be able to go do this stuff who has a Mac, which, hey, newsflash, a lot of the kids that are going to college are getting a Mac.
Yeah, but do they have OneDrive for Business? That's the difference, right?
They do with education. My son's got it.
Oh, yeah, I guess they do. Yeah, you're right. They get it for school.
My son's in elementary school and has it. Anyway.
Okay, so that's not going to work.
No. Hey, I got another funny kind of news bit that we can do before we get into the Azure stuff.
Yeah, go for it.
So this one's a little bit older, but so you know Yahoo, they had, this is old news, guys, so this is about a month old, but December the 9th. Yahoo had a significant stake in Alibaba, which is a Chinese company. And Yahoo was going to spin off their stake in Alibaba as a separate business. But I don't know about you. I found this kind of funny that all the investors kind of Yahoo, the shareholders, they all kind of went back and voiced their opinion and said, no, we don't want you to spin off your investment in Alibaba into a different business. We want you to get rid of everything else that's Yahoo and keep your spinoff. Like going, so let me get this straight. You're doing a reverse spinoff, which is basically Yahoo saying, we're going to sell everything that makes Yahoo, Yahoo. And then what you know as Yahoo is simply going to be a stake in Alibaba. It's like, wow, how times have changed.
Yeah, I think that's basically a protest vote of like, stop mucking around. We want to make some money finally.
Yeah.
I'm sick of waiting.
I would be too, but I mean, the fact that they're still holding on is kind of ridiculous, but anyway.
Yeah, that's funny.
Now we can jump into the Azure and the other Azure and AWS news. Do you want to kick one off or?
Yeah, sure. There is a post we flipped into Flipboard called Ethereum, I think you pronounce it. Ethereum blockchain as a service now on Azure. So this is pretty interesting. This is Microsoft partnered with somebody, I think Consensus, I think it's what they're called,
mm-hmm.
Who make a service called Ethereum Blockchain. And so it's going to be Ethereum Blockchain as a service on Microsoft Azure. Now, blockchain is the technology that powers things like cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and things, but it has uses outside of cryptocurrencies for people building applications. And so being able to offer that on Azure is pretty interesting. I thought this was pretty cool. I don't know a lot about blockchain. I haven't done anything with it myself, but kind of understand some of the basic concepts. And being able to offer these sort of services in the cloud seems kind of interesting, especially to app developers who want to be able to take advantage of them and not have to build them themselves or go find a thing and then, you know, an open source version or whatever, and then, you know, run it themselves, do things like that. So I just thought it was kind of interesting that they're looking at hosting things like this in Azure.
Yeah, this is blockchain. I mean, everyone thinks about this from Bitcoin, but I mean, there is a lot of application for this outside of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And it makes perfect sense to have this inside of one of the cloud providers like Azure or like an AWS, because the whole idea is that with a blockchain, it's essentially there's think about it as like a single like financial journal. Let's use financials as an example.
Sort of like a transaction log.
Yeah. So it's like a single transaction log for an entire system. And everybody that works with that transaction log maintains a copy. And there's no concept of rolling back. And everything is also completely transparent and public. So it's very easy to verify and to make sure that everything is legit and stuff. So it was pretty cool. That one kind of came out of the blue to me, but it was a cool announcement.
Yeah, it really did. It really did, and it is interesting that the article, you should go read it if you're interested, is they talk about, you know, different uses outside of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, so I have two updates here, or two bits of news here that I flipped into Flipboard. One, both of them are on DocumentDB. So one is talking about backups. So if you want to back up your DocumentDB database, which is good for those scenarios when you say you want to, if you need to restore some deleted data or something like that, there's an article kind of walks through the different scenarios and how you can take advantage of it. But then there's another one from another article from December the 15th. It's called DocumentDB Paging Support with Top and More Query Improvements. So they've got a couple new SQL style query keywords that DocumentDB now supports. So the four big updates here is number one, we have a top. The top keyword can be used in your query. So you can do like paging and limiting results in a query. There's limit increases. So you can now use up to 20 ORs and up to 200 items within an IN expression. Before, you were limited to numbers that were much lower than that. There's significant performance improvements. The query engine now has faster filter sort queries, a better index plan optimization, and improved incremental processing of queries with large result sets. And then another one that they did, which is pretty cool, is the link operators that have been added to it. So things like take and compare to, some conditional and coalesce operators have also been added to support for DocumentDB. So some good developer stuff there for anybody that's working with DocumentDB. They're really working and adding stuff pretty fast to this one service that they have in Azure, which is very appealing, at least to me. So
yeah, we're at work. We're about to start playing around with that and trying it out for a couple of different uses. So I may have more to say on it in a few weeks' time.
Cool, very cool.
Hey, I've got another one. Microsoft Azure Stack hardware requirements came out. So this is Microsoft have been pushing towards being able to get or run an Azure-like environment, but in your own data center. They talked about this at Ignite conference earlier in the year, and they're moving towards it. And they've come out with hardware requirements for the Azure Stack Technical Preview, it's called, which will be a set of software that you basically install on a bunch of servers or roles that you install, and you can run bits of Azure in your own data center, basically, to take advantage of some of the benefits of you know, app deployment and running applications and things in that environment, but within your own four walls, so to speak. And some of the hardware requirements are pretty interesting. So sort of minimum spec, 12 physical cores, 96 gig of RAM, Hyper-V enabled, obviously, Windows Server 2012 R2 for NIC support. What else we got here? Four disks, which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Each disk provides a minimum of 140 gig of capacity. Things like that. So they're getting. It looks like they're getting closer to getting this stuff ready for people playing around with a preview and getting it out. If any, I haven't played with it. Have you looked at this at all?
I haven't looked at it much. I did talk to two people recently who were really interested in this. I was asking them what their use case is, and so both of them were in the financial services sector. And one guy was a Microsoft consultant. From Microsoft, and the other guy was an actual customer, and they didn't kind of overlap. But what they said was they both basically said the same thing, which was the Azure stack is almost like the gateway drug for some companies who can't go to the cloud, but they can start using services that the cloud provides to ultimately be comfortable enough to move their stuff to the cloud. That's one. But the other side is now that what's important about this is that now they can really start planning projects and really starting to implement stuff to see what's going to be required in order to do Azure Stack on-prem. So
yeah,
it's interesting. It's an interesting option for a lot of folks. I think that for a lot of people, if you're already using Azure, this is not really something that I think is going to be too appealing to you because you're kind of, it makes sense for the customers who look at Azure and say, God, that would be really nice to take advantage of some of those things, but we can't because of X regulation or, you know, this business requirement or something like that.
Yeah, I definitely like the idea of, as a developer, I love the idea of being able to build applications and know that we're going to have the portability later on if and when we're allowed to do stuff in the cloud, right? So it'd be nice to say, hey, we can build things the same way or very, very similar way and know that when we can move, it's going to be a lot less of a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So yeah, and then that was min-spec, and then recommended is pretty interesting at 16 cores, 128 gig of RAM, things like that. So it's not like your laptop.
No. It's a pretty serious investment. But I mean, it makes sense for those companies who are definitely want to be able to do stuff like that.
Definitely.
Another thing that I thought was pretty interesting is there's a concept that has or a feature that was announced at Build last year called the Service Fabric from Azure. And this is what Microsoft is using today to host all their services, like SQL Azure databases or Azure SQL databases is on top of, is implemented with Service Fabric. And it's a service now that you can take advantage of as well. And it allows you to use things to build your own like microservices and hand them over to Microsoft to manage them for you in terms of how they're built and stuff. Now, it's interesting. I don't fully grok. I understand it conceptually, but I don't fully grok the whole thing. I have a bunch of questions about it. Like, do I have to build my application a certain way? The answer is yes, you do. There's two different models you can choose from. I guess the other question I would have is, you know, how is building an application this way different from using something like containers or Docker? And I have my perception of it, but I'm not going to share it just yet because I don't feel like it's fair. I don't feel like I'm knowledgeable enough in this area. But what I did want to highlight is there was a really good discussion that I found really enlightening on the Azure podcast. If you go to the Azure podcast to search for them, I've got a link to episode 108 in our Flipboard because they did a really good discussion going back and forth, kind of diving a lot deeper into Service Fabric and what it is. It answered a lot of questions for me. So if you're interested, I definitely recommend you go take a look at that.
Yeah, for sure. There was one interesting call out link that I found in there that talked about the .NET framework support lifecycle. Did you know that the .NET framework 4, 4.5, and 4.5.1 mainstream support ends on January the 12th, 2016?
Did that seem to you to be kind of early or kind of quick?
No, I mean, I think it's the standard support lifecycle.
So was it 8 years?
I think it's 8 years.
So 4.45 has been out for 8 years?
I mean, yeah. I'd need to double check that, but that's the standard support lifecycle.
Yeah, I'm missing that, but I saw that same thing, and it kind of surprised me. While you're looking that up, though, I saw there's another thing that I flipped in here. I found it really funny, but there's an article called Azure in Plain English, and what they did is they took all these different Azure services, and they took the product name, they explained what it was, and they said, here's really what it should be called.
Oh, nice.
So this was really, really good. So like, for example, Service Fabric, it says it should have been called Azure Microservice. Use this to have your class in code, have a class in your code, make it a microservice, deploy it to the Service Fabric, ask for a raise. It's like AWS Lambda or AWS API Gateway. They do the same thing. What is app service? What are web apps? They said it should have been called Azure PaaS, which used to be called Azure Websites. You use this to run stuff, but don't worry about the sysadmining. It's like Heroku, AWS, Elastic Beanstalk, Cloud Factory, Modulus. This is an awesome table if you're looking to compare things. So cloud services, what is that? Should be called Azure IaaS. That's VMs. It's like AWS EC2.
It's nice. Sort of the decoder ring.
Yeah, it really is. Visual Studio Team Services should be called source code CI. Use this to build apps with other people, shared source code, continuous integration. It's like GitHub, Jenkins, Travis, CodeShip, Bitbucket, AWS Code Commit. Pretty cool table there.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. So I just looked up on Wikipedia, and it says that the .NET 4.0 framework came out on the 12th of April, 2010. So that is not 8 years ago.
That's only five.
It's only five. Maybe .NET framework runs on a slightly different support cycle than most products.
Yeah, I guess we're familiar with the Windows side or the Office side.
Yeah, Windows and Office, right? They all run on typically 8 to 10 year support life cycles.
Yeah, and now that is just support on it for web apps in Azure. That's not in general, right?
I'm pretty sure that's in general.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, pretty sure that's in general. Yeah, so they're going to stop shipping bug fixes and patches. I mean, I kind of get it. Like, there are a lot more versions of the .NET framework than normal products, right? And they put out new versions because they want to fix things or add things. They're typically a lot more backwards compatible than most kind of frameworks.
Hmm.
So managing, you know, like 20 different versions or from 1.0, 1.1, 2, 3, 3, 5, 4, 4, 5, 4, 5, 1, 4, 5, 2, 4, 6, 4, 6, 1. Right, so 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11 different versions they got to maintain. So yeah, I can understand why they want to just maintain the most recent sort of three or four.
Mm.
But still, a little painful if you're running old code and haven't touched it in a couple of years and people and expecting patches for it.
Agreed. Yep. I have two bits of AWS news that I can share with you too. So first one is something called a new AWS EC2 instance that's available. They had an instance that they announced called the T2 Nano instances. They announced it earlier this year, but now they're essentially generally available. Now, this is a trip. So a T2 Nano instance has a half a gig of memory and one virtual CPU and can run either 32-bit or 64-bit. So if you can think of this, if you have just a tiny bit of demand here, price per hour for on-demand usage comes out to about only $4.75 a month. I'm basing this on their East U.S. data center, which is in
how much memory?
Northern Virginia, half a gig.
Oh yeah,
512 megs, one CPU, which is great for just running like a little job or something like that. Or that would be a good Active Directory backup box.
Yeah, gotcha.
Right. So $4.75 a month, that's for the on demand. But if you do a 3-year reserved, it cuts it down to only $2.10 a month. That's $25 a year for a server.
Yeah. Wow.
I love the cloud.
It's pretty cool.
Now
I was just gonna say, speaking of, you know, machines to run things, there is a new Docker tutorial that, well, not newish, it was published in September that I think you flipped to our flipboard, called Docker Compose, AngularJS, and Tudum Part 2.
Yeah. Oh, and Part 1's in there too.
Part 1 is linked, so it's highly recommended to go read it first, Part 1. But it's pretty sweet. I mean, it walks through building an entire app beginning to end and using Angular and using Tudum and Dockerizing it and all that sort of stuff. And it's just a really nice walkthrough. Mm-hmm. And if you're interested in getting, you know, following on from our Docker episode a couple of episodes ago, if you want to get started, this is a good one to try out.
Agreed.
Looks nice. I haven't actually walked through every, you know, all the steps myself, but, you know, sort of skim reading it looks pretty comprehensive.
Yep. I'm actually putting on my list of something to do, hopefully before the week is out. I do have another bit of news here that was by the Business Insider, and the title is, "This One Chart Gives You an Idea of How Crazy Amazon's Cloud Growth Really Is." AWS, Amazon Web Services, AWS is seeing a 78% year-on-year revenue growth. That's an astonishing rate compared to other large cap enterprise vendors. Now, the entire list that they have here, it averages out to just having a 6% growth of year to year, and Azure is a 78% growth year to year. It's more than double the growth rate that Salesforce has, which is arguably the fastest growing cloud software maker, and doesn't even come close to some of the old guards like Microsoft, Oracle, and SAP. You think about it, this is it's not really that old of a service, or that AWS launched, and I think it was in 2006. I can't remember when Azure first came out, but it was a little bit after AWS. That's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, that's crazy growth. Anybody who's doubting that the cloud is a thing for businesses, I think this is read it and weep type thing.
Yeah, it's the only place I want to be. I was listening to, the Office 365 developer podcast that Jeremy Thake and Richard DeZerga host, and I heard them talking about SharePoint 2016 on-prem version, and Richard said something that so resonated with me. He said his goal is not install a single 2016 install, and I'm right there with him. I have zero interest to do anything on-prem with, unless business gets really bad and I'm really looking to get some work done or really looking to pick up a client. But I am only cloud these days.
You know, it's not to say everybody's going to be in this boat, but it's what we've chosen to do. And
yeah.
And I'm in the same boat. If you catch me installing anything like that, give me a good slap.
Yeah. Let me just put this in perspective too. When I say that, everybody's like, oh, so you're just turning your back on all the on-prem guys. No.
Not at all. No.
Think about it like this. I've chosen to focus on like the Microsoft stack and Office, and I do a lot of stuff with .NET. I do a lot of stuff with Node. I do nothing with PHP. I do nothing with Java. I do nothing with Ruby on Rails. Do I have anything against those? No. It's just that's what I choose not to work on. I choose to work on other stuff. That's the same thing I'm saying with this here. I'm not saying that it's a bad option. I get it that there's a lot of companies that have to choose that. But to me, I want to focus just on the cloud stuff. That's the only thing I'm interested in these days.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. It's a personal interest thing, and we're doing our thing, but with the cloud now. So
exactly.
Hey, I wonder how they came up with all of these stats.
The numbers in this chart?
Yeah. They don't really get into it a lot, do they?
They don't. And the other thing I found kind of interesting about it too was, remember, these are run rates. And if you remember from a couple episodes ago, we talked a little bit about how Ballmer was giving Microsoft a bunch of grief. Steve Ballmer was giving Microsoft a bunch of grief in one of their quarterly updates with the quarterly calls with the analysts, that run rate is not an accurate representation of cloud growth. So we look at the same thing here on AWS, and that's kind of what these guys are basing their article on. So, you know, I guess take it for what it's worth.
I just want to know where they get it from. Like, do they go talk to customers about how much they're spending, or, you know, are they trying to decipher it from the financials, or?
These aren't numbers that are reported, because Microsoft hasn't really reported. They've come the closest, but Microsoft hasn't really reported this. AWS is notorious for not disclosing how much revenue Amazon is notorious for not disclosing how much AWS pulls in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
I think they're holding it pretty close to their chest, so to speak. So I'm surprised they're able to get some of these details. I guess we'll see if they've managed to get it from insider knowledge somehow, or I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
Cool. But that's pretty staggering, regardless of how accurate it is or not. I think, you know, relatively speaking, it's pretty impressive.
Yep, absolutely.
Nice.
Cool. That's a lot of news, man.
Oh, dude. Yeah, we haven't done a bit of a catch up for a while. So I'm glad we got through some of these things.
Yeah, me too. It's been a while since we've done this, but it was overdue. I'm glad we got a bunch of it done, and we are now ready to move on to the new year.
Yeah, exactly. And I think next episode, we will do our wish lists for the cloud for the next 12 months. How does that sound?
Wish list / prediction / whatever. All the just kind of looking forward stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And thanks again to all of our listeners. I think this is year number 2 done we had our 100th and 104th episode a little while back. Mm-hmm. So that was, 2 years of an episode a week. And we're really thankful that people listen to this show and have useful feedback for us. Like always, get in touch with us on Twitter, send us a question, send us topics you'd like us to discuss, and we'll happily consider them. So I'm feeling very thankful for our constituents and our base of listeners.
Absolutely. I feel the exact same way. I echo everything that you just said, CJ, that thank everybody who's been involved and listens and gives us feedback and stuff. We've got one or two episode requests in from two or three people, but send us a bunch more stuff. Just curious to see what stuff we get.
Hey, and one more request. If anybody is out there listening who is interested in sponsoring the show, it's not going to cost you a lot. and will help us cover the production costs of the show and things like that. So definitely get in touch with either AC or I on Twitter or something. Reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to just cover the costs for the show, getting it produced and put out, and we'll be interested in taking on a sponsor to do that. So let us know.
Absolutely. Cool, man.
All right. Have a great week, AC.
Yeah, man. Happy New Year.
You too, buddy.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.